18 magical ways Harry Potter changed your life, 44 pictures that you won't like looking at, 32 things you already forgot happened in Australia in 2014. That's just a selection of today's clickbait on the news site BuzzFeed. But it's not just about quizzes and lists and the best cat pictures at Christmas anymore. BuzzFeed has moved into serious journalism and news. To talk about the success and the future direction of BuzzFeed, I'm joined by Ben Smith. He's the Editor-in-Chief of BuzzFeed Worldwide. Welcome, Ben, to RN Drive.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, I'm going to ask a flippant question first. What do you think is the key to a good BuzzFeed list?
Being funny, being something that people are want to share with their friends, want to share a laugh with their friends over.
Is it something you can, when you come up with them, do you think that something, you know, if something's going to take off, or every now and then does a list take off that you think, why are people
You can't really predict these things too much, because one thing that's really important is novelty. And so whenever you feel like you've got a formula, you need to change it.
You've been recruiting journos for BuzzFeed for some time. What are the things you're really looking for? Are you looking for something quite different than traditional media looks for?
You know, I think we look for one thing that's different from what, you know, a newspaper might look for, which is the ability to tell stories on the internet the same way a newspaper wants somebody who can write a reverse pyramid story. But I think one thing that's the same, you know, we look for aggressive reporters who are going to find stories that haven't been told and very fearlessly get them.
And are they using different tools, do you think, than traditional journalists?
You know, I guess I don't really see. I mean, I think, you know, I think journalists at a range of places are in love with Twitter these days, for instance, as both a reporting tool and a way to distribute the things you've written with Facebook. I mean, I'm not sure there's a real clear line between traditional and untraditional these days. We don't use, you know, lightsabers or anything.
Why not? What kind of serious news stories do you think are popular right now on BuzzFeed, and why do you think they're popular?
You know, I think there's certainly in the States, but also really globally, there's a kind of a generation of readers who are interested in stories that are about human rights. I think like the politics of human rights have sort of in some ways replaced a kind of more drier geopolitics in the way you cover news. And so for LGBT rights, you know, our second international correspondent was an LGBT rights, a global gay rights reporter who, you know, in those stories, it's not just that they're things that readers care about. They've become really very much part of the fabric of geopolitics. If you look at what's happening in a place like Russia, where a human rights story about gay rights is really very much also part of their play to take over Central Europe. So those are stories, you know, that we report aggressively and care a lot about, for instance.
And what about what's happening in the United States at the moment? It seems that obviously the Ferguson story continues.
Yeah, stories about race and identity. I mean, the internet in a way is organized around identity, the way people share, the way people, you know, and I think there's a new conversation around, and a franker conversation around race in America in particular, that, I mean, I think newsrooms
franker now than it has been
in the past. I think newsrooms and the media in particular always had a very kind of stilted, neurotic relationship with race, partly because the media traditionally in the U.S. has been so white and liberal and well-meaning, but I think like really neurotic about talking about race openly and afraid of making mistakes around race and on eggshells a bit. And I think there's sort of a generation of media that is maybe a bit more diverse and also a bit more interested in engaging those issues.
Is it too simplistic to say that that's a kind of a race dialogue or race discussion you can have now that there's a man of color in the White House, or do you think it's something else?
Yeah, I think that's probably too simplistic. That's one of, I mean, you know, race in America is a complicated topic. That's definitely one of the things that's going on, but only one.
Yeah. What else do you think in terms of race and identity are the big issues in American news at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, the sort of relationship between Black Americans and the police is just a huge story. You know, you've got protests
shutting
down. And
that's not a particularly new story. Like, it's been around for some time, and some of these issues have been around for some time.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of kind of the mysteries of news, right? That it's not always that it's new. Like, it's all about the moment.
Yeah.
And this is certainly, you know, these stories of Black men winding up dead in kind of what ought to be routine encounters with the police, in which, you know, these guys ultimately did nothing wrong, and with the American legal system not really having a, you know, just ultimately not holding anybody accountable.
What additional concerns does an online click-based journalism service have that traditional print journalism services don't?
Well, I think we all actually are kind of living in the same universe now. Readers are on Twitter or on Facebook or on Pinterest or on email or looking at television or listening to the radio every every bit of media is competing with every other bit. And so, I mean, I think it's a much more competitive environment. You used to, and you know, you're in a privileged position of having people trapped in their cars listening to you. Is that maybe that may be the last place you can do that, where they're, and hopefully they're not, please put down your phone. They're not looking at their phones.
Well, the capacity for distraction.
But I think it's an incredibly competitive, distracted environment. So you have to do stuff that's hilarious or moving or revelatory or gripping that people will not only, you know, not only read, but then also share, which is a very high bar.
And so does that mean that BuzzFeed is going to struggle to go into long form journalism? So is it that you've really got to capture those kinds
of stories? No, I think we've struggled. I mean, you know, it's funny. There's always this stereotype that the young people these days, they have no attention span. I'm not sure if that's ever been true. I mean, I think it's just something old people say about young people always.
Indeed.
But it's certainly not true now. I mean, even if you look at our funny stuff, we're talking about lists of 75 corgis. You know, I mean, those are long lists. But we've been very successful with long form journalism. I mean, I think not
can you
because
give me
it's long.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. We had a really deep investigation of this real injustice in certain American states where women who fail to protect their children from their partner's abuse go to jail for sometimes 10 times as long as the partner who is abusing the child. And you know, that was a story that was read more than a million times. I mean, it's a huge audience for some of these stories. And we find that people really, you know, when they're really well-crafted and moving and have a kind of emotional core, that people will, you know, read them in the hundreds of thousands or millions, in fact, a much larger audience than you'd get for a magazine or newspaper.
What about something like what's happening with Bill Cosby and the allegations of sexual assault?
It's not hard to get people to read that story.
No, it's not hard. But it's something that, it's interesting that it's coming out now. I mean, these are allegations that have...
Yeah, that's a story that's been in plain sight for 20 years. I do think that it's harder to control. It's harder for the apparatus of lawyers and PR people around a celebrity to kind of control that story anymore. There are outlets, you know, ours certainly among them, that really don't care whether... You know, Marty Singer is going to send us a nasty letter. That's Cosby's sort of legendary lawyer. I mean, you know, aren't worried about our relationship with his publicist. And so, you know, Kate Arthur, one of our great chief Los Angeles correspondent, has really been hammering on this and is part of what kind of, I think, kind of broke the floodgates on it, that people were saying, oh, that's old news. No, I'm not sure that's old news. I mean, and so...
So what makes her so fearless? Do you think, or not as?
I think just like sheer bloody mindedness. I'm not sure, you'd have to ask her.
Is it because it's a more competitive environment?
It's not just more competitive. I think it's everybody has less control. I mean, we do. Politicians do. It's not that we have more power. I think we have, as journalists, less power than we used to set the agenda. But so does Bill Cosby and his publicists. I mean, it's just a much more power has been much more distributed.
I want to talk about reader responses to stories. I mean, it's always interesting to see what stories take off and the nature and the quality of the reader responses. How seriously do you take them? Do you read them? Do you look through them? You know, is it a loud minority that comment on stories?
I mean, I think, you know, reader responses come in a lot of different ways. They come in @replies on Twitter. They come in comments. They come in emails. You know, my email's on my all over the place.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, no, I read it all.
And what do you get from it, do you think, as a, you know, from a, as a learning experience?
I mean, in the best, it depends so much, right? I mean, if you write about Israel and Palestine, all you get from reading the comments section is like deep despair about
is
humanity.
Is that right?
I mean, of course.
Because it's so polarized,
because people are so nasty and irrational in internet comment sections. I mean, Gamergate, right? Like there are places you do not want to go on the internet. That said, there are stories where, you know, readers will engage so deeply, or particularly on topics, maybe like education. You know, where they have a lot to say, where you can find tips and new stories and new ideas from readers very routinely.
Are you somebody who's in contact in any way with journalism schools across America? Do you have any sense of what graduates are looking for? I mean, there must be a sense where some of them are just leaving journalism school, forgetting about the Wall Street Journal and saying, no, I want to go to some of these.
Some of my reporters went to journalism school, but I've never really viewed journalism as kind of a profession in that sense. I think it's, you know, what we do is, you know, thinking and writing and digging into things. You don't necessarily have to have gone to school for that.
Are you finding that you're getting graduates who are basically coming to you straight away and bypassing some of the more...
I think in the States, it's often been the tradition that journalism never totally professionalized, which I think is a good thing.
Do you hope to build a reputation amongst readers of all demographics?
Yeah, you know, we don't.
Who is the BuzzFeed reader?
Our readers tend to be. I mean, I think something like 60% of them are 18 to 35. But you know, we have a huge audience. That means there are lots of people, a lot of parents, a lot of people outside that demographic as well, who we reach. And I think it's very story by story. If you write a story about Indigenous Australians, are going to hit a very different audience than if you write a story about Bill Cosby. I mean, and I think in a way, just the way stories travel around the internet, being shared from person to person, each story in a way has its own publication with its own audience.
What's more important to BuzzFeed, Twitter or Facebook?
Oh my God, that's like this elemental question about the internet. Pinterest should be one of the options.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we have three editorial divisions. We have BuzzFeed News, and in a way, Twitter is the heartbeat of news. We have Buzz Team, we call it, which is the entertainment, the lists and the quizzes, and Facebook is, again, sort of the heart of that. Although Facebook also has a lot of news on it. Facebook is vastly the biggest social platform in the world and has become a really great place to distribute news as well. And then Pinterest, you know, for lifestyle content, for home and garden, for DIY, for fashion, for food, is really a great, I mean, I love the app, but also it's just a great, it's sort of the front page for that whole universe now.
Do you see the role of Facebook changing anytime soon, especially in terms of people sharing, you know, your content?
You know, I mean, I think there are always new things coming up. WhatsApp, which Facebook bought, and these other messaging services, WeChat and Line, and these many other services, are a place now where people are going, as well as Facebook. I mean, I do think Facebook is a real central part of the media landscape right now.
And there's no way to avoid it. That's not going to change anytime soon for you.
I mean, it's not really. It's not Facebook's fault. It's the users.
I'm
of
not
Facebook.
Blaming
you know, no,
Facebook.
No, but I'm saying it's the users of Facebook. We're going to be. You know, we certainly will care a lot about Facebook as long as hundreds of millions of people are using it.
Now you have a new app. Tell me what that's about. What's the thinking behind that?
Well, we are working on a new news app. I think on the theory that one of the ways there's been this sort of splintering and disaggregation of news, and which can be, if you're not, I mean, I love Twitter and I'm on Twitter 1,000 times a day and am not disoriented by it most of the time. But if you're only going to Twitter 500 times a day, it can be pretty disorienting because you don't know what happened in the last 3 minutes. And I do think that there's one of the things that people sometimes want is a more coherent experience, like what you used to get in a newspaper, probably not just once a day in the morning on a dead tree, but kind of a more coherent experience of what's happening in the news. And so we're working on a news app. Yeah, it's not ready to go yet.
What are your views about advertising online? What do you think's working and where do you think it's going to go?
So BuzzFeed has never taken any banner ads. The tradition of online advertising are these little boxes on the side, which people have developed this thing called ad blindness. You've learned to ignore them.
Absolutely.
And so as a result, advertisers now have to have this huge box come over your screen, and you can't find the little X to click it closed. And as a journalist, like, that's the worst thing in the world if your company is actually deliberately obscuring your story from your readers. We come out of this other tradition, which is called native advertising on the web. In a way, it's the older tradition, which is that advertising that isn't terrible. It's the tradition you see in like a women's magazine. If you're a fashion magazine, if you cut all the ads out of Vogue, it would be a worse magazine. And good television advertising is the same. You know, it's in the form of the thing you're watching. It's a video on television, but it's hopefully compelling. And so what we have is this sponsored content that, you know, that doesn't live alongside our stories. It is its own. It's its own kind of usually lists and quizzes and fun stuff. One of my favorites was the HBO took it an ad on BuzzFeed that was a quiz that was huge. It was a how will you die in Game of Thrones.
I did that quiz. How did you die?
I got a bird through my eye.
You got a bird through your eye?
Yeah. How about you?
Oh, I can't remember what it was. I remember I was really, really unhappy. I wanted to fall off the wall, or I wanted like one of the really cool characters to kill me, but none of that happened. Everybody, I hope all my listeners go out there and do the quiz, and please send us your ways to die through Twitter or Facebook. The future of advertising, is this native advertising formula going to work for you?
Yeah, I mean,
that's our immediate future.
You know, we're not, and in fact, I think if you look at what BuzzFeed Motion Pictures, our video arm in Los Angeles, is doing, I think there's a lot of really innovative, great, new online video and video advertising also that doesn't, again, come in the form of those awful quick 15-second pre-rolls that you have to wait to get through, but that is itself really fun, interesting stuff. There's one of our most popular videos we've ever done, actually, was something called Dear Kitten, which was an ad for Purina, very clearly labeled that, but was also hilarious.
Ben, what brings you to Australia?
Well, we've got a small team here, six people doing, you know, things you forgot that happened in Australia in 2014 and a certain amount of quokka-related content. But you know, and it's been very, very popular and successful here, and so we're going to be investing quite a bit more in news here, over, and as well as in entertainment and in lifestyle over the next year. And our editor, Simon Kerrara, and I have been talking to job candidates and things like that, and we're really excited about Australia.
That's great. Thanks so much, Ben Smith, Editor-in-Chief of BuzzFeed Worldwide.
Thank you.
Talking about journalism, the internet, and the key to a good list.